So this is like a little embarrassing, but I'm just going to go ahead and talk about it. And I'm curious about it.
I mean, that's I think that's how we do the show. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? It's good to talk about things that are embarrassing. We'll just make it less weird for everyone.
That's why I had that platform about the book where everybody shits themselves. Yes. Listen, it's important.
This is along those lines. So
okay, great.
It's funny that we talked about like body hair recently. But I today might. My neck hair came back.
Oh.
I don't know if I've ever told you
came
about it.
Back?
Yeah.
No.
So I have like this
wait,
one...
is this like a random hair on your neck or something?
Mm-hmm. And it's like right at the point in my neck where like it's like just barely starts to curve down. So it's like kind of under my chin. So it's like very, very difficult for me to see it.
Is it like a patch or like a single hair?
It's a single hair. And I
so funny.
And I feel like that fucker grows like overnight, or I'm going like weeks without noticing it because every time I get it, it's like longer than an eyelash. It's like a quarter of an inch, maybe half inch long.
Is it like coarse?
Yes. It's like an eyebrow hair growing out of my neck.
Okay, I had a singular hair one time that like grew out of the middle of my nose. It's never come back.
You told me about that.
I swear to you. And I first I thought it was a blackhead, and then I was like, wait, this is like a hair. And like, I know there's hair all over your face, but this was coarse to your point, like an eyebrow hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I plucked it out, and like immediately my eyes were like streaming. Oh. Nothing has ever hurt as bad as plucking a singular hair out of my nose.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's so sensitive. Things with your nose make your eyes water so bad.
So fast.
The neck one makes my eyes water like crazy, too. It's like...
I believe it. It's a sensitive skin.
And the root on it. I'm just like, this is... It's
like absurd. It's like that sucker is like setting up camp.
Yeah, like it has a tentacle trying to reach down into my body.
Ew.
But so I don't know. I occasionally get paranoid about it. A coworker first informed me of it. That's how I became aware of its presence. But I could have had it for years and not known, honestly.
How did this person point it out to you, and did you feel weird?
I did. Well, first she was like, "Hey, I think you have an eyelash on your neck," and I like tried to wipe it away and could not.
Oh no.
And then she like tried to pull it out for me and couldn't get it, so I had to just like get it later at home. But that was embarrassing. But you just have to like own it. Like I also like wax the area below my belly button from time to time. Like
listen, we all have hair different places.
Yeah, sometimes you get a rogue eyebrow hair down by your ear and you're like,
sometimes
why?
You have like a thick coarse hair grow out of the middle of your nose.
Yeah, sometimes I do wonder sometimes. Why that would happen. Like neck hair makes sense to me if like something hormonal was going on for me, and
yes,
like maybe my body grew a hair on my neck, but like the nose, I almost feel
the
like
the nose doesn't make sense. I agree. It's not like
it's like something
mustachio, like it's not in the facial hair region that would be like, oh, is this hormonal?
That's what I'm saying, is no one has hair there, and so it almost makes me feel like some kind of spore like landed in one of your pores. A pore spore.
Yeah, maybe I had like an alien like landed on me and like set up base camp. I don't know.
That was actually extraterrestrial life that you plucked from your face.
No wonder it made me cry.
Yeah, it really wanted to be there. Anyway, enough about my rogue body hairs. And welcome.
Our rogue body hairs.
Thank you. I didn't want to like pull you under
the
bus
alone.
With me. But yeah, I'm not alone. Guys, if you have hairs that you have to pluck or that you choose not to pluck, great. Probably also you have hairs you don't know about. But
facts. Maybe a coworker will tell you about them.
Maybe.
Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
We can't afford to be third wave about that, so whatever.
Jamie is like ready to do just like late night phone sex ads, and honestly, like, here for it.
That's you gaslight the teacher. Okay.
Who's participating in this study that's like, here for like the $30 I like came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it? I'm like, who's that guy?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
This is what I want, because I assume these people get to have deep chats all the time together because they go to youth group. And I was like, I just want someone to talk to me, and I was just like...
Anal insertions aside.
I do believe in fairies. I do.
Well, Welcome to Why Are You Like This, the home of rogue body hair consumers?
Havers?
I don't know. But Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect our rogue body hair or some part of human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, our culture, pop culture, in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan removing rogue neck hairs in Cincinnati.
And that's Austin Williams, maybe with aliens in her nose, in Chicago.
I hope that there are aliens in my nose, kind
of. It's a shame you didn't save that. You should have manically taken it to a lab for testing.
Maybe.
They'd love that.
Maybe I should have. I think I was, like, filled with shame at the time. And then now I'm like, let me tell you about the story. I one time had a weird hair in the middle of my nose. Now I just, like, want to tell everyone about it.
I feel that way, too. And when I was plucking the hair today, I was like, wow, I think maybe, like, a year ago I would have never told this story. But I'm just like,
yeah,
whatever about it.
Well, I like that.
Thank you.
I like that. Here's to talking about, you know, all the things that once felt like we couldn't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I hope more things keep being added to that list.
I think that they will. This feels like the trajectory that we're on. But enough about rogue body hairs. That's
enough of it. What are we talking about tonight, this morning? This afternoon, actually, technically,
for once.
Welcome to a special afternoon edition where we're recording while the sun is still up.
It's sort of up for me. Yeah.
It's also where we are, not, you know, usually we're coming at you on a Tuesday from when it was us on a Monday, but tonight, even though we're still coming at you on a Tuesday, it's actually a Saturday, so, like, you're it welcome is. For this fun weekend energy.
It is a strange weekend energy.
I'm still having a glass of red wine, though, because it just, like, felt right.
Oh, I'm kind of jealous. I have Malbec downstairs, but I'm not going to go get it.
I'm drinking a Pinot Noir out of a nice ballooned red wine glass because I've been drinking out of, like, shorties so often, but I like to base my wine consumption, like, my glassware on, like, what city I want to be in. So I have some glasses that I drink out of when I want to pretend I'm in Spain. I have some that I drink out of when I want to pretend I'm in Paris or, like, some part of France. And when I drink out of, like, big, like, obnoxious, like, classic wine glasses, I pretend I'm in Manhattan because that feels on brand, you know.
That's really funny and cute.
But I haven't been to Manhattan in a while. I've mostly been living on, like, Topless Island, so I'm back, baby.
Welcome back.
Welcome to New York. Welcome in the words to of New Taylor York. Swift, welcome to New York.
Oh my God.
Well, on that note, I mean, what are we talking about tonight over this Manhattan night Pinot Noir?
Over your Manhattan Pinot Noir, we will be talking about, get ready for it.
I'm ready.
Snakebite churches.
I mean, I'm so interested because I truly know nothing except for, I feel like, maybe bad stereotypes that could not even be the accurate representation, I don't even know, that are, like, from cartoons or something.
Yeah, I honestly knew shockingly little before this week, despite maybe referencing snakebite churches conversationally for humor.
Okay.
That's pretty much the extent
Besides
of it.
Making jokes about things you don't understand. Yep.
For
carry
sure.
On.
yeah. Exclusively just ignorant jokes is what I was doing. But so I
feel like that's 50% of people talking, though, like, usually.
Whoa. Yeah. That's a good observation. But I have learned very much about snake bite culture. And okay. I'm very excited to share it with you.
I'm excited. What's, like, the general premise? What does this mean? For people who are like, I don't even make jokes about snake bite churches, what the fuck are you talking about? What are we talking about?
So my kind of intro to snake bite churches was, so my dad lives in, like, rural Kentucky, and he has a friend who makes his living catching snakes in the woods and then selling them to certain churches in Kentucky.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Like, talk about a job or, like, an industry you didn't know existed.
Had no idea. I don't think, I mean, let's call him an independent contractor. Small business owner, perhaps.
This is a freelance situation, a little entrepreneurial spirit. But still, it's, like, a job that I was like, oh, like, someone's paying their rent that way.
Yeah, someone's doing that. So he told me that, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, what church is, like, getting a snake?
Yeah, truly. I mean, that would be my first question. They're like, oh, yeah, my buddy sells snakes to churches. I'm like, for what purpose?
Exactly. For what purpose? So on this episode, we will get into some examples of people who run the snakebite churches and their stories.
Okay.
But first, I just want to talk about like what the religion is to like set the stage and the tone a little bit, because...
Yeah, I need to know because I don't know.
And even for me, someone who I feel like is almost like a semi like post-religion nerd, like I know a weird amount about Christian offshoots.
You do. I like it about you.
Thank you. But this one I really was confused by. So.
Okay, great.
We have to start with describing Pentecostal churches and the holiness churches. Have you heard of either of those?
Pentecostal, yes. The holiness, I don't think so.
So the holiness is like a little confusing. I'm not going to get into like the breakdown of how churches split apart because it's just like long and listy and
boring history about like white men who got mad at other white men about them being like just a slightly different.
Precisely.
And so then they're like, fine, I'm taking my toys and starting my own club.
Exactly. Like, so just know that like the church broke apart a million different ways, and snakebite churches come out of kind of like an extreme version of being Pentecostal.
Okay.
And so Pentecostal Christians believe in like the Christian Bible similar to like evangelical religions.
Yeah.
And I don't want to like
literalists.
Yeah.
They take the Bible literally. Like, yes, it's a super historical document.
Like it's a historical document. They have a heavy focus on the second coming of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
They were major contributors to rapture theology. So the idea that the world will end in some kind of hellscape and Jesus will come back to gather all of his followers and take Basta. Them away. Basta! Yes.
Basta!
Pentecostal and holiness churches also believe in a personal transformative relationship with the Lord. So kind of the idea of being like a born again Christian.
Okay.
It's evangelical adjacent, and they're often very charismatic churches. And by that, I mean there's a lot of showmanship in the services. And these are like also
performative.
Very, very performative, yes. And there's often at Pentecostal churches either fire present in the service and almost always people speaking in tongues.
Oh. Okay, this is some serious-ish. It also is fire.
Some serious. Wow. A lot of Pentecostal holiness churches and snake-handling churches require that women wear the long dresses, that they don't cut their hair. So I think we've all, like, seen some of these people in public and maybe kind of clocked, like, unusual garb. But it's... What I researched this week, specifically on Appalachian snake handling churches, there is a culture of the men wearing long sleeves and having like very short, tight hair, and the women, for modesty, covering fully, often in long dresses. And then there's something, I don't understand why they don't cut their hair, but the women are not allowed to cut their hair.
Yeah, I've never really dug into that, but I've always found it an interesting thing. I guess I kind of always assumed maybe it was like women are like encouraged to like it's like still traditional beauty standards of like women having long hair rather than women having short hair.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost kind of feel like it. I always assumed it was like of this mindset, both of like, you're the way God created you and like don't mess with it.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Also perhaps of this like don't be too vain, like don't be too caught up in your appearance, so you shouldn't be like really like doing a lot to your hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of the way I interpreted it, but I don't know. That's worth a search.
I don't either. That is worth a little search.
I thought it was like an anti-vanity or like a don't mess with God's creation thing.
That would be probably my guess also. That feels like a good inference.
Sure.
So then snake handling churches, how are they different? So let's have a little Wikipedia for this.
Always favorite source.
Here we go. Snake handling is a religious rite in the United States, also called serpent handling. It is observed in a small number of isolated churches, mostly in the United States, usually characterized as rural and part of the holiness movement, which I talked about a moment ago.
Yeah.
The practice began in the early 20th century in Appalachia. So this is only like 100 years old.
Wow.
And it plays...
And like Appalachian, which is, I think, I don't know. I just, I don't know if I would have guessed that that would be the location of this like snake handling church thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So like, right, like early 1900s, it came about in Kentucky. There was kind of like one upstart group, and then there was another guy in Georgia who started a different sect, and they just have like slightly different beliefs about the Trinity, which is too much to explain. But just know that, like,
I assume they're disagreeing about the Holy Ghost, because even people who love the Holy Ghost can't tell you what the F it is.
Yeah, people get hung up on it. Anyway, so participants are either holiness, Pentecostal, charismatics, or other evangelicals. So snake handling is kind of like this disjointed, like not super unified part of some of these religions. So there isn't like a main like Church of Serpents or something that these people are all paying dues to. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So yeah, they all have essentially Pentecostal beliefs, but then practice like kind of their own version of it in their region. Okay.
Got it.
So to give you an example of the mindset that these people are in, I would like to play you a clip from a National Geographic YouTube video that I found called Drink of Death, Snake Salvation.
Oh. Oh. I mean, like, this is like a clickbait headline for me. I'm like, yes, to say
absolutely.
More. Yeah, play it.
So what you're going to hear in this clip is part of a church service. The church pastor, his name is Jamie Coots, and we will continue
not
to talk.
Not to be confused with Jamie Ryan. It's fine.
And we will continue to talk about Jamie Coots and his family, because there are four generations of Coots men who are snake handling preachers. And Jamie Coots actually died in 2015 from a snake bite during a service.
Oh my God, I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm not glad that anyone died, but, like, I cannot wait for that story.
So before he was killed...
a hazardous profession.
I know. Before he was killed, Nat Geo came in and did, like, a little special on their church. So here is an example of some stuff that goes on there.
There is five signs in the book of Mark. Where it says they shall take up serpents, then it says, and if they drank any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them.
I wonder how many of them got a jar of some kind of deadly thing and drinking a deadly thing. Come on, man.
Once you take a drink of any deadly thing, once it crosses your tongue and you swallow it, there's no going back.
They shall take up serpents, and if they drank any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. Them two is put together for a reason. They's harming them.
The Codys have supplied the bottle of lie for tonight's service.
Oh,
but
my
Big
God.
Cody has also brought another far deadlier poison designed to attack the central nervous system.
Strychnine. They've probably about 475 drops in that jar. I know people's died from it. The old man Williams and them mixed the same jar up out of the same stuff we mixed that out of, and one brother drank a half a jar at night, and the other brother drank the other half a jar, and 4 hours later they both fell over dead.
Wait, what?
So they are not just handling snakes, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Wait, but they're, like, drinking lye?
They are drinking lye, and they're drinking strychnine.
Why?
Yes, and what you heard was one of the congregants explaining that he had mixed up that jar of strychnine from the same recipe that his neighbors had mixed up, and when the neighbors consumed it, they had both died within a few hours. And so,
I mean, is he saying that means, like, the devil's in you or something?
So their attitude is basically that they are going to do all of these, I'm going to go ahead and say crazy, daredevil, high-risk things, and that the Lord will save them. And if the Lord...
Because they're good, quote-unquote.
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God.
And what they talk about a lot with the snake handling is that you're supposed to... try to like listen to the Holy Spirit and see if you should pick up the snake or you should not. And you're supposed to like kind of like listen for God to tell you if it is or is not an acceptable time. but they're...
I'd be out here like, no, I'm good. Absolutely. I don't think I'm good enough to pick up this snake ever. I'm a sinner. Yeah. I'll be here sinning for forever. I'm not picking up the snakes.
Permanent sinner, can't touch the snake. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be my platform. Whoa.
I know. And then Jamie...
Also, why were people like, the neighbors like, yes, I will drink this half a jar of lye. Like, what?
I know. It's,
is he saying that he drank like the other mixture and didn't die and was fine?
They have all at church taken a few drops of the poison at different times. So
he,
I think he was just kind of attesting to like the toxicity of the mixture he had brought.
Oh, so he's like, other people drank this and they died. So, yeah. Like, it really is bad shit.
Two of my neighbors made exactly this same beverage and were dead in 4 hours. So I have brought this to church because...
I mean, that's a terrible idea.
I know.
Also, it's like a terrible testimonial. Like, yeah, I got some neighbors who drank a jar of this and died. So, what?
I know. So their whole attitude is putting your full life in the hands of the Lord and that... you serve God and then family and then work. And for a lot of these people, part of the law of God is to handle snakes and to drink poison. And also they play with fire in a similar way where they believe that like it won't hurt them. But there's like literally a shot in this documentary that I watched of Pastor Jamie Coote's wife holding a torch and like dancing and speaking in tongues and like going like with her shaking her face in the fire.
Oh my God.
Yes. Oh my God.
And so, she doesn't get burned?
I mean, like, her face is really red after, but I guess like, no, her hair didn't catch on fire. But also like, you can run your finger through a candle and the flame just like moves away from you and it's okay.
Wow, I don't know, man.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And it's really unfortunate because everything that any like witness account of a snake bite church or interviews with people who are attendants or pastors, it just feels like everyone is very, very uneducated and like the energy of the church is almost like this like toxic wave that people get swept up in because the church services are like music and charismatic preaching that like evolves into like a lot of shouting and then everyone in the congregation is shouting in tongues and then they get out the fire and the snakes and everyone is like burning themselves or like holding a deadly snake. If someone gets bit, they don't stop the service.
Oh my God.
They're not supposed to go to the hospital because that's like you're like laughing in the face of God or like you're going like against his will.
Okay, so that's like kind of like Christian scientists, like what I know, where if let's say you get really sick, like Christian scientists who are like hard in their faith and like I'm trying to search
devout,
for the word, but just
maybe?
Like devout, yeah, thank you. That's good. Like, very devout, very, like, you can't say orthodox because that's not, like, a sexist Christian scientist, but, like, that kind of vibe. And if someone got, you know, a disease like cancer or something that you needed, like, some kind of treatment, as so we believe, they would not seek that out, but you would, like, pray that
the person would be better. Right, just exclusively prayer, yeah.
Yeah.
So same kind of situation. They really feel that if it's the will of God, you will live. And that's where they leave it.
Wow. That's really intense.
I know. Okay. So that's a little intro to the church. That is a church in sort of the southern edge of Kentucky, right near Tennessee. And they have been in trouble a few times because in Kentucky, it is illegal to possess like snakes as a pet or like as just like a thing to possess.
All snakes are like certain breeds?
No, I'm sorry. The ones that they are acquiring like in the wilderness or from local merchants. So the snakes that they're using are copperheads, and it's called a timber rattler. So it's like very similar to a rattlesnake, but it's...
These are like venomous, like fuck you up. It's not like the garden snake your third grade teacher had.
It is not. It is not a garden snake. And it's important to them that the snakes are venomous. And what they say about that is that if they were using snakes that had their fangs removed or snakes that were not poisonous, then what kind of a testament would that be to non-believers?
I mean, I don't think there's any testament that's going to make me, like, hold a venomous snake, but
or sure. Make me believe that, like, the Lord is protecting you while you hold this venomous snake.
Yeah. I think if I were to get on, like, a Lord protection thing, I'd be like, yeah, the good Lord gave me a brain enough to not pick up a venomous snake.
And the Lord helps those.
That was my first level of protection.
Who helps themselves.
Yeah, I don't know. Wow. Wow. No.
Okay. So that was Pastor, Reverend, whatever, Jamie Coots. Okay. And like I said, Jamie is in a line of four generations of snake bite pastors. So,
is he like the papa, like father snake, or is he like, where is he in line?
He's number three. So his father and his grandfather and also his son were or slash are snake bite preachers. So the next documentary I would like to touch on, you can find on YouTube if you'd like to watch it.
Love a YouTube doc.
It is a Barcroft documentary. That's like the name of the company, called Snake Handling Pastor Bitten by Deadly Rattlesnake, My Life Inside the Snake Church. It is two parts.
Yeah, I have questions. My Life Inside the Snake Church. Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, it was like watching children play a game that's gotten way out of hand. You know when you like watch kids play like jury or court or something and it just gets like too intense?
Yeah, or like even I think about times that we would like as kids like have like a water fight and then like would like maybe really target one child.
Yeah, or I think we had a water fight. Like, we had like a hostage aggressive. Situation one time in a water fight.
Wait, a what?
There was like a hostage situation in a water fight.
Oh, there was a hostage situation in one of our water
fights. And that child was
fights.
Very, very upset. Anyway, so maybe not
a
great
thing
to do.
Yeah, they were taken hostage. it happened.
It happens. Whatever. It was war.
It's very Lord of the Flies.
Uh-huh. Wow. And we only had an afternoon.
True.
Anyway, so these grown children that I was watching are the congregation of Jamie Coots, and the main sort of focus of the documentary is on his son, Cody, who has taken over his father's position as the head of this church. So on the open, we meet Cody, and he tells us, "I do not fear snakes. Snakes do not mock me. The only times I've been scared to be around a snake was when I had sin in my life, and I knew I shouldn't be around the snake anyways." So there is something to be said for if you're, like, worthy to snake handle or not.
I mean, yeah, but whoa.
Yeah, I mean, whoa for sure. And it also cuts to his wife, and she's just like, she's like, I think that this is crazy. I disagree with it, but he'll never stop. And so I just pray that, like...
Wow, interesting marriage.
I know! And she's like, I just pray that, like, he'll go to the hospital next time he gets bit. Like, and his dad died of a snake bite? I don't know. I just feel like it's a stressful existence for this woman and her children. Because he has a wife and children. So do I.
Yeah. Wow. Ooh, I don't know. That's intense, dude.
Yeah, it is very intense. So we get to see a church service, which is fun to see, but I would not want to attend. And it's similar to what I described with the speaking in tongues and the snake handling and the music and the shouting. But just to give you like a feel for the inside of this church, this is not like a televangelist mega church. This is a building that looks like it's maybe still under construction, even though they've been using it for four generations. And there's maybe 15 people in attendance, like maybe
15.
Yeah. Like probably less
it's
than.
It's tiny. Like it's small.
This is a tiny little like country church house. Yes.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
So then Cody takes us into the snake room, which I guess, of course, they have a snake room. And there's, it's like lined with cages, and each one obviously.
I'm like both shocked and not shocked. Sorry, I'm like hung up on the 15 people thing, because part of me is like, this would be crazy if there were like a ton of people who were like, yeah, totally. But then I'm also like, it's weird to me that people are doing this really extreme stuff in just like a small group. Like, it's not for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. There is a feeling of like intense isolation. And wow. I don't have a lot of,
I mean, you'd have to be isolated to be on board.
For sure. And I was going to say, I don't have a lot of like data to back up that claim, but it just felt like a lonely place when I was watching it.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Cody takes us into the snake room, and he's showing, he's picking them up. He's showing us, there's one that he just like starts like spanking to like make it move around. And I'm like, maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah, like maybe let's not. Wait, how many snakes do they have?
There were probably 20, roughly.
That's more snakes than people in the congregation.
It is more snakes than congregants. That's really funny. Wow. I didn't think about that. But Cody tells us, as he's handling these snakes for the camera, that, quote, when the Bible says they shall take up serpents, serpents means any kind of venomous snake. And if it wasn't poison, it wouldn't be assigned to unbelievers. As I mentioned before, it is important that they are venomous.
Right.
It is at this point that we get the first mention of his father's death.
Okay. Well played, documentarians. They're like, and you're like, oh.
Yes. So as I mentioned, Jamie Coots was Cody's father. He died on February 15th, 2015. And on his grave, which they do show us, his headstone, is the Bible verse Mark 16, 15 through 18, which is the verse about they shall take up serpents. And I'm just like, wow, like you did this literally to your grave and then inscribed it on your grave.
Wow.
It killed you. Anyway,
I mean, but if you'd like die because of like you believe like in snake lord stuff, I mean, I feel like that is what you put on your tombstone.
Yeah, you just
like,
white knuckle it. What else would you put? I don't know.
Because, like, own it.
Yeah, yeah. And he let it kill him. He got bit and wasn't treated. And then they write it on their grave. And I feel so bad for Jamie's widow / Cody's mom, because she is like in the back of every shot in both documentaries I watched, the one about her husband and the one about her son. And she is just like so accepting that her fate is to have her sons and her husband just like Russian roulette themselves to death.
Wow.
It is so crazy.
Do women handle the snakes, or do just the men handle the snakes?
Women do handle the snakes, but in every shot that I saw,
I wondered how gendered it was.
The men were doing it more. I saw more women holding fire.
That feels right.
Well, it feels like a little less risky because
Totally is less risky.
Yeah, you can't control when the snake's going to lunge at you. But you can control where you hold the fire.
When you pull your hand out of the flames. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I would also, although again, I don't have anything to back this up, there's such a like a self-righteous daredevil quality to the men in this documentary that it does feel a little gendered to me. Or maybe not gendered, but I almost feel like just testosterone is really playing a role.
Okay.
In the snake handling, because the showmanship is so intense, and then something that Cody says at the end and kind of his conclusions make me think that, but I don't want to ruin anything, so we'll get there.
Sure.
So yeah, I think a lot of testosterone just banging around. But
yeah,
we see a flashback of Father Jamie Coots when he was alive, and he was being interviewed by like an ABC News special. And he's showing the reporter all of the different places he's been bit by snakes and the scars, and like telling the story of what happened. And the worst one, and I was like not prepared for this when it came up on screen, but the worst one was a rattlesnake bit his middle finger, and he lost the finger like down to the second knuckle. And the way that he shows us is he holds up his regular hand, and then he holds up like a shriveled finger that looks like a piece of ginger. Like,
he has his piece of finger?
He has it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been prepared for that either.
Unprompted, gets it out, lines it up with his finger that's still attached, and explains what happened. And his wife is just like in the background in a rocking chair nodding. And he explains that it was his wife who told him he had to keep it. There was some kind of religious reason I didn't understand, but.
Okay, wow.
He kept the finger. Wow. It was so, so gross. I'll see if I can find a still for you sometime.
Yeah, you should. Keeping like a piece of your finger. I don't know about that, y'all.
Yep. I don't know about it.
Hope to never find out.
Absolutely not. No. I think about losing a finger a lot, actually. I think some of it's from working in a restaurant, and some of it's just from like being like a clumsy person with like no knife safety.
Really? Do you think about losing like a specific finger?
I think about like losing the tip of a digit or.
Wow.
Like, if my finger gets, like, caught in something, I'll often then spend, like, several minutes pondering, like, what I would have done if my finger came off.
I, like, never worry about losing a finger. It's not, like, a phobia I have. But I like, with anxiety, I'll really worry about, like, having a dental trauma. Like, I really worry that I'm going to, like, fall and, like, break my teeth.
I also worry about that. Or when I, like, smack myself in the teeth with glasses. Like drinking glasses.
Yeah, I know bottles. What you meant.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I do. That's something I think about like consciously. I've never felt like concerned about losing a finger. But to your point, yeah, if, like people like in kitchens or like people who work in like wood shops or like that kind of with your hand stuff.
Yeah.
Could happen.
Yeah. One time my grandpa shot a nail with a nail gun through like the fleshy part of his hand between his thumb and forefinger. And like,
ooh, that hurt.
He was on the roof. And so he had nailed his hand to the roof. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It was crazy. It was the
grossest. And then his hand was attached to the roof. So, you know, he had to pull it out so he could remove his hand.
No, he pulled his hand up, which is so much worse.
I'm like, oh, did he like have jerk reaction and pull his hand up?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Sweet angel.
So it just went through. Yeah.
Y'all, I don't love that story.
That's almost better, I think, though, than if... Can you imagine being on a roof, and I think he was by himself, and having your hand nailed to it and knowing that you had to, like, rip it off or, like, try to call for help? Like, I'd almost be happy if I just ripped it out before I realized.
Well, I would think I would want to have, like, I just imagine, like, having a hammer and then having to pull the nail out.
I don't know if he did because it was a... nail gun. Anyway, not important. He pulled his hand back.
Yeah, so we can't derail
on,
like, nail gunning your hands to the roof. But I have a lot of feelings about it.
My grandfather's stigmata is irrelevant.
Yeah. Or is it? Oh, it got very religious in here with the stigmata nail gun. Okay.
So after we hear about this, like, finger incident, we see Cody's sister at their father's grave and...
of course, dramatic pivot.
Yep. And she explains...
Like, shoot to someone in a cemetery. Why not? I love documentaries.
There are multiple scenes in the cemetery by Jamie's grave. And they, like,
I just, like, of course there were. I love that they did that.
Yes. And they continue to pan to, like, the inscription on it.
Look, of course they did.
Yes. So Cody's sister is at the grave and she explains, my daddy made a vow to God that if he ever got bit, he wouldn't go to the hospital. So he did follow through on that.
I mean, yes. I just think it's weird that, I think it's weird to believe in a higher power that, like, to respect that you're like, something terrible happens to me, I won't try and seek help in your honor. You know, like, what?
Yeah, well, and it's also strange that there's, let's go here for a second. I think it's a very human projection to think that, like, God or a creator would desire, like, the constant, like, loyalty testing or, like, proof from people. Or, like, that they would have to do these dangerous, like, against your own nature kind of things.
Right.
To, like, prove love for someone. Because think of a human being asked you to do that.
I'd be like, bitch, no.
Just abuse. Yeah.
Yeah, I truly. I mean, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. So that, I don't know. Sometimes when there's, like, a religious thing that I'm like, why does this feel so wrong? I, like, imagine that the orders are coming from a person, not from God. And then I'm like, oh, that's why it's wrong.
Oh, yeah. Clears it up. Yeah, that's a really interesting way to, like, flip it. But I side with you. I'm like, fuck. Like, Thank you. If a human asked me to do that, it is just abuse.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also the people in this church will cite the Bible passage where in the Old Testament, where God orders Abraham to kill his son. And then, like, Abraham is, like, following through with it until, like, the last second. And, like, right when he's about to kill his son, God's like, hey, never mind. That was, like, just a test to see if you loved me more than your own child. And you passed.
Which, I mean,
that's a fucked up story.
That's, like, one of the most fucked up stories I've ever heard in my entire life, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to continue to derail on this, but just one more brief side note. When I was doing the research for the Satanist episode, I came across a bunch of schools of thought that I'd never heard of. That,
oh, okay. I love that. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so there's, like, whole systems of belief built around the idea that Old Testament God is, like, actually... like a tyrannical overruler who is, like, not a good, benevolent figure and, like, actually is, like, an evil person. And then...
Well, I mean, Old Testament God isn't, like, a benevolent God.
Yeah. Not at all.
Hebrew Scriptures God, however you want to play it.
And I don't know enough about Judaism to say, like, if it's Hebrew Scripture or not, but, like, the portion that Christians call Hebrew Scripture, yeah, for sure. It's a rude God.
Yeah.
But then the theory goes that, like, in the New Testament, like, some other deity took over that was more benevolent. And I'm not, like, necessarily here for that ideology, but it is an interesting thing to think
about.
That's
kind of polytheistic. That's interesting.
It is. It is kind of polytheistic. Yeah. Anyway.
Do those people consider themselves Christians?
No. These were some Satanist writings that I was reading.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
And then there are, like, other independent people who are not Satanists who have, like, weird biblical conspiracy theories about that. But no.
Oh, I love this.
I know. It's maybe a fun dive for another time.
Oh, so fun. Can't derail on it, but, like, kind of love it.
Kind of love it. But the snakebite people do not believe what I just said. They are here all the way for the literal Bible in its entirety.
Got it. Heard.
So at this point in the documentary, we kind of shift over to like the main event. They're having, like, seems like some kind of a revival or like an extra big special service. And we see a guy who is also named Cody, but is not Cody Coutts. They differentiate them by calling them Big Cody and Little Cody. And in the clip, in the clip that I played for you at the beginning about the poisons at the service, I'm sure you didn't clock this, but the narrator says the Codys have brought a batch of poison, and he means Big Cody and Little Cody. So
I mean, of course, there's a big and a little. Feels right.
There's only 15 people, but there's two Codys. So
people, stop recycling names. I don't know.
It makes it hard to tell the story. Come on.
So, it makes it hard for us and historians and people conducting censuses. I don't know.
So Little Cody is Jamie Coots' son, and he is Cody Coots, the head of this church. Big Cody is his friend and former drug lord who converted to this religion and has since changed his life.
Okay.
And we see Big Cody out kind of in the wilderness grabbing
naturally, like shooting to some people in graveyards, some people just being shot in the wilderness for like no reason.
No, he's got a reason. So he's there catching snakes for the church. And a part of me is like, don't you have enough? Like, I saw all of those cages.
You seem to have plenty. This is fine. Yeah.
But they're like gearing up for whatever this big night is. And he explains that he catches snakes because the church needs them, but also because it's fun. So he's
I mean, I hope that if you are into like a snake church, that you enjoy snakes. Like, you have to like be into it, I think.
Yeah, I think you have to be into it. And this man is just reckless with the snakes. He is also guilty of like just spanking them to get them to like do something when they're in the cage.
I hate this.
Fucking reckless. reckless.
PETA is like not pleased.
Absolutely not. No, there's like so many animal issues in here, and I will talk a little more about that in a minute.
Okay, all right.
So Big Cody is gathering up the snakes, and little
as one does, the snakes.
And then we they take us to church, and we see the beginning of the service, and they are like, honestly, just like going fucking nuts, and everyone is screaming, and Cody Coots is up front holding a snake like wrapped around his arm and shoulder, and okay. There's like another portion of the snake that is just like kind of free and doing what it wants that is okay. like as long as his arm probably. So yeah. This snake has like a lot of freedom to move around and is just like wrapped around his shoulder.
Okay.
Cody is screaming at the top of his lungs into the microphone, and the band is playing just like so loud, and everyone in the church is being loud. And I had a moment where I was like, wait, this is really bad because snakes have like hypersensitive hearing, or they're like very sensitive to vibration.
Yeah, this is like what's gonna set them off.
Yeah, I'm like, this is exactly how you make them angry. And then, of course, and I'm like, not that surprised that it happened on camera, but this snake just like rears back and nails Cody in the temple, and
oh my god,
Cody does not stop. He screams into the microphone, keep going, to the band, and so the band keeps playing, and
oh my god.
Cody is screaming like unintelligibly. I had to like, there it is captioned on this part, and the snake is still wrapped around him, and he is screaming, the Lord will heal, the Lord will heal, keep going, and like blood is spurting out of his temple and running down his shirt. He's covered in blood,
and oh my god,
yes. And he finally, like, nods to someone else to, like, take the snake. And then he, like, stumbles and almost falls over. It is absolute
poison, blood loss, like...
Yes, absolute chaos. And just
does he die?
He does not die. But he does go to the hospital, which he said he would never do. And if we remember, generationally, his father was bit many times, chose to always not go to the hospital, and then it eventually did kill him.
Yeah.
So Big Cody is at the service, and
okay.
Big Cody and Little Cody's wife convince Little Cody that he has to go to the hospital. And so they load him in the car and they drive there, and hospital stuff happens. We see photos of Cody in the hospital, and his face is so swollen up. It looks like a cartoon.
Like yeah, because of, like, poison.
Yeah, just, like, absolutely ballooned up. It's crazy.
Oh, my God.
Okay, before I describe what happens when he gets out of the hospital, I just want to play you a little clip of the church service when he gets bit that I just described, just so you can hear kind of, like, the level of chaos.
Yeah, I want to know. Like, you described it, and it sounds insane.
It's insane, and it may be, like, a little hard to hear what's going on, but I'm just going to try. So here we go. The snake bites him right there.
Oh my god.
He's screaming, God will heal it.
Oh my god.
And he is still holding the snake. And listen to them speak in tongues.
This is like so intense.
I know. They're carrying him out of the church now, and all these people are following and shouting in tongues. So that was chaotic and hard to hear.
Just like, whoa.
I just needed you. Yes. So like when he is screaming and you can hear like the microphone peaking, like he has a snake around him. Just the recklessness just like absolutely blows my mind. And can you imagine how scary it would be to be there? Imagine you're like an 8-year-old kid attending this service.
I'd be terrified. Are there small children there?
Yes.
Wow.
I know.
That's like very disturbing.
It's very disturbing.
I imagine like if I were a child watching somebody do that and I was raised and like, this is like our faith. This is like what we do. And then being afraid as a kid after having seen someone get bit that like I was going to have to grow up and like get bit by snakes.
Well, and it kind of seems like that's the culture. Like when they interview Cody and he talks about his family and he talks about growing up in the snake bite church, snake handling church, I'm sorry. he has such a fatist mentality. Mm. And he says at the end, and we'll get there, but he says that they would never, like no one would ever be able to take this away from him. It's in his blood. He says, I'm fourth generation snake handler. My dad did it. It's all I know. I'm never going to stop doing this.
Wow.
Exactly. And so like that's part of what makes it feel so isolated to me, I think, is it's very clear that there are not other influences coming into this community.
Yeah, it's just like, this is our destiny. This is how we do things.
And I think it's how they have a sense of control over their lives, and that there's some irony in like playing Russian roulette with a snake making you feel like you're in control. But I think having a strong, like very intense belief, even if it's something that is kind of like a risky thing to do, helps people have more feeling of control over their life. Like if they believe that they are just a part of God's plan and whatever God's will happen for them, there is comfort in that.
Right. Wow, though.
Even though the method is truly, truly, truly nuts.
Yeah, I mean, this is, like, frightening.
Yeah. So Cody has been bit a lot of times before, but they've never been very serious. This one was very serious because it was right next to his temporal artery. And the staff at the hospital explains to us that if he had gotten there any later, he would have probably bled to death. And that they should have called an ambulance so that they could have stopped the poison faster.
Right.
So after.
So does he have like lingering problems mm-hmm. because of this bite?
Oh yeah. So this one really fucks him up. He has perhaps permanently doubled vision in his right eye, which means both eyes unless he closes his right eye.
Right.
Because it bit him on that side of the face. And then he also has semi-paralysis on the right side of his face. And he has mild visual hallucinations. So not nothing.
Oh, my God.
Not nothing.
Not nothing at all, though, dude. Whoa.
Yeah. His demeanor is totally different. It was actually very strange to see this incredibly charismatic, like, arrogant, but somehow likable young man get bit and then transform into, he's like very quiet. His demeanor is like smaller. He's not energetic the way he was before. He's gained some weight. He's very pale and has dark circles around his eyes. He had like a really kind of like kept up hairstyle in the beginning of the documentary. Like it's clear he was like using clippers probably like every 3 days.
Yeah, it was like high and tight.
Yeah, yeah. And in the latter portion, after he has the bite, it's just like kind of grown out haphazardly. And he always wears like pink and blue suits in the beginning and is like really into like wearing stuff that other people don't like, which I think is a funny quality. But he's just wearing like sweats and like a gray outfit in the latter half. And I don't know if some of that was like instructed, but you really feel the shift in Cody.
You feel like it's like he let himself go after this because he couldn't like take care of himself anymore.
Absolutely. And the first time we see him after he's recovered, he is at the kitchen table with his mom describing his NDE. So his mom is like, do you feel
near-death experience, yes. If you haven't been with us for that acronym before.
He is describing a near-death experience. His mom is like, do you feel like you almost died? And he was like, I did die. I know I died.
Oh, my God.
And then he, like, goes on to explain, like, the tunnel of light and, like, the feeling of the Lord and all of that. So that's a funny little aside. Back to his changed demeanor. So
yeah, tell us everything.
We see Cody again back in the snake room at the church.
Okay.
And this time he is just standing in the middle, like away from the cages, and he's not interacting with any of the snakes. Okay. And he tells us...
good. I don't want him to ever interact with snakes again. But
I don't either. But he tells us that he used to like race down to the church hours before the service so that he could get there and like get the snakes out and like mess with them before everyone else got there, because he wanted like more time for that.
Okay.
And he says now he only
like
will get them.
Like a warm up, if you will. Yeah. A shoot around, but with snakes.
Well, I think they really excite him, or they excited him. Because he says now he doesn't like to get them out unless someone else is present, and that he's like constantly afraid.
Of course he is. He had a near death mm-hmm. situation with mm-hmm. the snake.
And Big Cody is back and is like being a little reckless with the snakes, and Little Cody is like in the corner of the room telling him to stop. And it's just like such an interesting character shift. And it is disappointing that he later concludes that he'll never stop because it's all he knows. But
even though he like doesn't like really want to do it anymore and is afraid now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's never too late to start over, Cody. It's never too late to be what you might have been.
Yeah. Go somewhere else. Learn some other things. But he at least dials it back. I will say, like, he's not as reckless, and he's not going to be as reckless, it seems like, because at the end, when he's talking about his experience, he says, first of all, that he thinks the reason he got bit by the snake was he made the mistake of allowing cameras back into the church.
And oh my God.
Shortly before his dad was fatally bitten by a snake, his dad had allowed, a documentary to come in. And so he's thinking like, oh, this is what happened to my dad. And then I like let it happen again. And so like, this is God telling me I shouldn't have done that. But now he says he handles the snakes, only when he feels especially called by the spirit, and he does it thoughtfully and carefully. And he's no longer concerned about or excited by the showmanship of it. So he really owns that, like, he was doing this as, he says, a fulfillment of himself. So
yeah, I mean, I think, and I also, it feels like he's saying on some level through his actions and his changed approach here that I truly don't think he thought what happened to him could have happened.
No, I think he truly thought that he was invincible. And this is similar to like when a teen gets in a car wreck or something and they
have that
moment.
That's what I was
going to
say.
Mm-hmm,
yes.
Where they realize like, I can die.
Well, right. And with like teenagers, that's truly like brain development. Like mm-hmm. when you're that age, you don't like actually psychologically have an understanding of your own mortality.
Absolutely. He is only, though, I think 23.
That's pretty young.
25, maybe. He is very, very, very young man. Young children, and he should be careful. Anyway, so it was nice to see kind of like his turnaround. It was interesting to see him talk about his change through a religious lens, because it was a lens that I felt very familiar with from my time growing up in churches.
Yeah.
Because his attitude was essentially that he was using the snake handling as a way to glorify himself and get attention that he enjoyed, and to like be the star rather than
being
he says,
a daredevil, like a thrill seeker.
Exactly.
And you're doing it with an audience.
Yeah. But how tempting for somebody who's like a little bit of a ham, a little bit of a daredevil, likes to get a group going.
Maybe an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah. And then you start talking about hell and fire and the devil, and then talk about how like doing all of these risky things is actually glorifying the Lord and it's the right thing to do. And that's fucking confusing and weird.
It's super confusing.
And I can't imagine the like the emotions and like the body chemicals that are probably happening during a church service like that for people who believe in it.
Yeah.
Like that clip that I played you to participate in that. You must just fully get swept up and feel like a part of like the group energy.
Yeah, well, and if that's all you know and that's, like, what your community seems to be invested in and, like, that's what they know. I just really think about being exposed to that as, like, a kid and growing up with that. And so, like, yeah, I mean, kind of.
Because how could you unlearn it? If that's all you know is normal, your whole life, everyone.
And the people you care about and look up to.
And you trust, yeah.
Yeah, look at it as normal and, like, what you do. Yeah. Right,
and he saw his father as, like, this, like, wise preacher who he looked up to, totally. And he wanted to be just like him, and so he's just doing that.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't, that's
just truly incredible.
It is truly, truly incredible. And I like oscillate in my feelings between being like, someone should like shut these things down because of like child endangerment, animal endangerment. Like,
I mean, I think about kids being in there and I'm just like, Chico, what?
Well, and actually, let's think about kids being in there for a second, because even if they're not handling any of the dangerous stuff.
No, but what if you saw what happened to him, to Cody, happen like as a kid?
Absolutely.
I'd be terrified.
What if it was your dad?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I just, like, want to publicly thank my father. Like, one, thank you for not, like, yelling and handling snakes in, like, a religious way ever.
Yeah, you know what? Thank you to everyone.
I'm just glad my dad, like, never yelled and held snakes in a room. That feels, like, too much.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine.
No, I can't either.
No, not at all. So, Cody Coots is okay as of right now. He is still a preacher at that church. He's still handling snakes. And things are going how they're going.
I want to set a Google alert on his name just in case, anything crazy happens, I'm alerted.
I know. And, well, especially because, like, his dad was already, like, semi-famous in the documentary world and then was killed by a snake.
Right. By a snake.
Right. Oh, my God. I you have to later probably watch the clip of him getting bit. It's so crazy and intense.
Oh my gosh, everyone, look it up. Someone,
maybe we can post it.
If you have the stomach for that, check it out.
Oh yeah,
stop,
that's
what you're
maybe
doing.
Too aggressive to post.
Get on YouTube, you know.
Oh, so that is Snakebite Churches.
Not what I thought it was,
I know,
to be honest.
I expected to do more of a history dive, and when I did the little history dive, all I found was that one of the creators of, like, the Kentucky branch that we just talked about was perhaps a con man, and he had four different families who for a long time were ignorant of each other. So that's hard. And he had, like, a lot of drinking problems and moved all around and then started these snake bite revivals, and they really caught on. But there's not a ton of interesting stuff in the history, because it's mostly just legislature about not being allowed to have all of those snakes.
Yeah, and then people have them.
Yes. And then there's like a weird sub-economy.
And then they shoot documentaries and nobody comes in and arrests them afterwards for all the snakes.
No, they do not. Oh, the last little thing that I wanted to mention about the documentary, because I think it's interesting and speaks to the mentality of this subculture of people. But after going to the hospital and recovering from the snake bite, we see both Big and Little Cody together. And Big Cody is kind of defensively explaining to the camera that he thinks that it's okay that Little Cody went to the hospital, and that despite what some people in the congregation or the community might think.
Oh, did he get, like, backlash because he went? Wow.
So he's, like, a less trusted preacher. Yeah. And it, like, fucked up his reputation, basically.
Did they lose, like, congregants or followers because of this?
I'm unsure, because we never saw another service, so I don't have anything to, like, judge that by.
Wow, though. That's intense.
It is very intense. And it's really too bad that his community is upset with him for going to the hospital for that. Basically for living, yeah. And the nurse that they interviewed said that he would absolutely have died.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it.
She also said that if he ever gets bit by a venomous snake again, he will probably die almost immediately.
Yeah, it sounds like kind of like a bee sting situation. It's like, you've been exposed to the, and you know, like, your reaction gets worse over time. I don't know a lot about, like, venoms.
I don't know a lot
stings,
about venom,
but,
yeah.
But I would see how maybe that would be like a thing.
Yeah, I would too. And I will say, I don't know how long after the bite we saw him in the documentary, but he is very weakened. Like, his body is very different.
Wow. Guys, don't get bit by snakes.
Don't get bit by snakes.
I've never been, like, I feel like snakes rank in, like, a general phobia list is actually something pretty high for a lot of people. And I've never been afraid of snakes, but I just, like, also don't live in a way that I anticipate running into them frequently.
Yeah, I'm definitely, like, never thinking about my dislike of snakes, except, like,
yeah, but I think some people definitely do.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think it's a pretty common thing to be freaked out about. Like, I think it's probably as common as spiders, and I certainly don't like spiders.
I'm more afraid of spiders just because I'm interacting with them a lot. I'm not, like, seeing 5 to 10 snakes a day the way I am
but
spiders.
I think if you lived in, like, the right area in which you did see a lot of snakes, you might be more freaked out by them. And this exposure to this story and knowing about this community kind of makes me more afraid of snakes.
Yeah, actually, and now I'm like, next time I'm in a lake in southeastern United States, which probably will happen, I will be like worried about water moccasins.
Right, or like if you're in like a tall grass where you know there are snakes and you
like,
can't
do
see.
Think about snakes in the tall grass and the I don't fuck with tall grass.
I don't fuck with tall grass.
And it's been a disappointing thing because
this makes me want to fuck with tall grass less.
Well, you want to run through it and have like a beautiful sort of anthropology moment, but but I just think about getting ticks and the snakes and the spiders and the little creatures, and it just, I can't be Snow White about it, and so it ruins it.
Yeah, I mean, that's real. I do worry. I'm not here for ticks, you know?
No. Have you ever had a tick? Brief aside?
No, I don't think I have. But I remember one time when I was at summer camp, there was a girl who had, like, a tick, like, in her ear.
Ah.
And it was, like, not, like, in, like her ear canal, but it was in, like, the top part of, like the larger
on
flesh.
On, like, the cartilage area up top?
Yeah, like, near where you'd get your cartilage pierced if you were going to do that. And there was, like, a tick, and the girl, like, I didn't see it, but, like, the girl next to me, like, on the other side. So I'm in between a girl who has a tick in her ear and the girl who spots the tick in the girl's ear. And she was like, don't freak out, but she didn't realize it was a tick. She goes, I think there's a spider on your ear. Like, she just saw this, like, bug thing.
Yeah.
And was, like, chilling. And then, so the girl does freak out, as you would.
Right.
Because I would freak
Smacks
out.
Smacks it or
and
whatever.
And then, like, one of the counselors was like, oh, that's not a spider. That's a tick. Come on, we got to get this thing. And they, like, steamed it, like, out of her ear to, like, get it to detach. It was big.
I didn't know about steaming. I always heard you should light a match and then touch the tick with it so that it, like, pulls its little hooks out, like it gets scared and jumps back.
Yeah, I think it's like a heat thing. I thought that they use steam, but like maybe they did use a lighter or a match or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But there's a variety of ways.
So
I
felt like I saw
one
up close once, but that's my closest like encounter with having a tick. Have you ever had a tick?
No. I had a really bad time in a kayak with a lot of those Jesus bugs that walk on the top of the water.
I've never heard them called Jesus bugs, but that's so funny. But I know what you're talking about.
I don't. What are they? Water spiders? I don't know.
I would just call them like water bugs. I don't know. I love that you were like, they walk on water. So, you know, those Jesus
people,
bugs.
I am not alone in that. People call them Jesus bugs. And to keep this anecdote relevant to the
like
episode.
People you're related to or like a lot of people?
That's a good question.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah, like, so by a lot of people, do you mean like your family?
So growing up, I heard them called Jesus bugs. Cool. I've never examined that, but maybe just my family calls them that. Get at me if you also call them Jesus bugs. I'd like
to
know.
If anybody else calls them Jesus bugs.
Anyway,
right in,
they look just like ticks. So I am like covered in these bugs from the water, and like every time I paddle,
they were ticks?
They're like coming up onto me. And so I was like, fuck, I'm like covered in ticks. And I was like thinking I had to jump in, but then I saw like the surface of the water was covered with them. And I'm like, I'm in the middle of a lake covered in ticks, and it's fully, all the top of the water is ticks. I was in North Carolina with my girlfriend, and she was like very actively trying to get me to calm down.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh. It was, so that was not a tick, thank God. And I am no longer afraid of Jesus bugs.
Ticks. The water is covered in ticks. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, because I was like, I'll jump in. No, I won't. Yeah. Yeah, it was a rough time.
I can just watch you spiraling. It's funny. Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In a loving way, it's funny.
Thank you. It can be funny You're now, welcome. But it was hard.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a funny story. Probably wasn't funny at the time, but you know. No,
but that's okay.
Yeah, so it is okay.
Do you have questions or confusion at all about snakebite churches? Because I know that I didn't do like a lot of history or like ideology
I
stuff.
I guess my only question is, I mean, we talked about this kind of like the first family of snakebite and like this one area, but do we have a sense of like how many snakebite churches there are, or like how many people in the States are practicing this kind of religion?
I don't have a sense of numbers of how many people, but it is centralized in Appalachia and the southeastern United States. So,
yeah, rural areas, it sounds
yes,
like.
Yes, it's very much in the rural South. Snake handling is a part of some Pentecostal churches and evangelical mm-hmm. churches. And so, like, it's hard to say what a snake handling church even is.
Yeah.
But I would guess that the numbers are, like, whatever the numbers for, like, Pentecostals in America mm-hmm. are, like, maybe take, like, a tenth of that amount or even less.
Okay.
It seems very, very niche.
Wow.
But
so interesting.
Has had some attention lately because of the incidents and also because of some legal issues with animals and things like that.
Yeah. Wow. Wild.
It is truly wild. And I also think that they're probably not growing in numbers, because I think it's something that if you were not raised in it.
Because people are literally dying.
People are literally dying.
Their members are dying. If anything, they're shrinking in numbers.
And you have to imagine, like, a lot of the kids who are born into it probably leave. And there's probably not.
I mean,
not a ton of recruitment. The recruitment that I heard about was the local drug dealers converting and becoming born again into the snake handling religion.
That's my favorite part. I love that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Meth is no longer risky enough. I'd like to handle snakes. I've changed my life. I'm turning things around.
Okay. Thank you for saying that, because I've been trying to figure out like how to say that in a way that wasn't offensive, but like, let's just say that.
Yeah, how you called it. I called a spade a spade. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. It's fine. Thank you for doing that, because they talk about Big Cody switching over his focus from drug dealing to the church. And I'm like, okay, this is still like a high adrenaline activity. You're like going into the forest and like hunting the snakes and then coming back and having like some kind of rip roaring adrenaline party with everyone with the snakes.
Sounds a lot like being a drug dealer.
It kind of does. It kind of does. He's still involved in operations.
All right. All right, Cody.
All right. Well, in true Why Are You Like This fashion, if you do not have other questions, then shall we wrap in a verbal game?
Always.
So, cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
Now, verbal game may be a little misleading. This is more of an open-ended question area.
I like open-ended questions.
It's the discussion portion, the wrap-up.
They're kind of verbal games, yeah.
They are, sort of. So what I wanted to ask, I was thinking about this a lot as I was researching this week, but do you do, or do we do, any risky things that you can think of because it makes you feel good or accepted or excited or like socially or spiritually proven?
Wow.
Like what excites you in this way or feels like?
I don't know that I'm like an adrenaline person. I don't know that I like get excited by things, but I think I do things sometimes that maybe are.
You're performative for sure.
Well, yeah, I have a performative personality. I like to be that way. So like, I mean, yeah, if you want to say like I'm into like commanding a crowd with a story, and by a crowd I don't mean a congregation, I mean like a large dinner table,
for sure. But
yes,
no part
like
of that is
that.
Risky though.
Yeah, it's not risky. I mean, I think if I like think about like risky behaviors, I guess sometimes like I do a lot of things by myself as like a single gal about town, and I think sometimes I can be not super thoughtful in certain situations or places I put myself in, particularly like alone when it's dark.
I.e. safety.
Yeah, but like at the same time, I'm not doing that because it's like a thrill.
No, but I think you're not like, ooh, I can't wait to be unsafe later.
Like, I got this. But I guess I am doing it in some way because I want to feel like nobody can tell me I can't.
Oh, yeah.
There's something that like...
That's a really good point.
I do things by myself or like go to certain places or do certain things. I think a lot of women probably identify with that. Late and I'm like I know other like I'm aware that there are people who'd be like you shouldn't walk home from here or you shouldn't x y and z and I want to be like no I can
I totally feel that it's like
but I think that might be just be like being stubborn
well it's sort of being stubborn it's like you kind of staking out your territory and saying like I'm not gonna like live in fear so I'm gonna like take a handful of chances that other people might think are more intense than I think they are.
Yeah, I think that's what maybe that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, yeah, and definitely stubbornness, but also, I don't know, as someone who also like has to be very aware of their personal safety due to like body size and being a woman.
Yeah,
like I definitely feel angry about that sometimes. Like I'm like it sucks so much that I can't just go for a jog right now even though it's 10 p.m. because I have a lot of energy but that's not a thing that I can do and so there is like a fuck you quality sometimes when I'm like nope I'm just doing it for me I feel like the only thing I could think of that I do or I don't do anymore but I used to do that was kind of like a risky sort of self-fulfillment thing. Well, I used to have a lot of risky behaviors actually, but
you're like there are periods in time when you're like the riskiest motherfucker I've ever known. Not as much anymore, which I'm glad. You're not as reckless as you once were.
Well, when you don't necessarily want to be alive, you don't value your choices, so
you know, it's that's honest.
Dark times behind, yeah. But something that I used to do when I was younger was shoplift from time to time. And
that is a risky adrenaline thing.
Yes. And I think for me, it was like the feeling of getting away with it. So I didn't even, I didn't want the thing that I stole. It was a trophy from the activity where
ballsy, James.
I know. But that to me, I guess, felt related because something about getting away with it felt like it like validated my intelligence or like feeling of being able
like
to
like I can outsmart these people because I'm getting away with this.
Yeah. And so it was like I didn't even really care about the risky activity and it was very risky, but I had some kind of like validation that I experienced from it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember times that like I can remember like a specific time we were somewhere together and like with a bunch of other people and then we were like gone from that place and then you just had something from that place and there were two of us who were like, wait, how did you? And then we were like, oh.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something you were just like, yeah, I did. What?
Yeah. No, I just try to be nonchalant about it. Yeah. And because it was never for attention either. It was just the feeling of getting away with it. And I know that's not a good character quality to have. But it's honest and it's what I was getting out of it.
Yeah, that is honest.
Yeah, less risky behavior now. I think for both of us, you were never very risky though, which is good.
No, if anything, like, I don't want to say I'm like riskier. I don't know.
Well, more adventurous.
The older I've gotten, the less of a rule follower I've become because I've like realized more rules are dumb.
Yeah, but a lot of rules are dumb.
Yeah, but I think I had to, you know, grow up and then be like, it's okay to think that people's rules are dumb.
Mm-hmm. And some people need to grow up and realize that the snake handling methods they taught were wrong.
100%. Okay, so speaking of the snake handling methods, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Okay, so the snake bite church, we've got the situation. Is there an animal that if you were in this situation, like if you were going to be a part of a snake handling church, right? Mm-hmm, is there an animal that you would like to handle less than the snakes like described in this kind of situation? Is there something you think would be worse or do you think snakes are like the pinnacle?
Mm, Snakes are pretty bad. I think the reason why snakes are so scary is because, like, as a human being who is a vertebrate creature, I have a spine and, like, a specific bone structure that I understand and legs. It's very difficult for me to understand the movements of a snake.
That I think that's why they startle people. Same thing with spiders. A lot of times people, because of the eight legs, the way they move, people oftentimes are like, I don't like them because I don't like the way they move.
Yeah, it's just so foreign and feels like I can't predict it. That's why spiders are uncomfortable too, because they're going to like jump backwards or to the side in like a way that I don't understand and cannot predict.
Because it doesn't feel like an innate way to move, the unexpected qualities of it are startling.
Absolutely. Yes. So would there be a worse animal? I mean, spiders is up there.
Yeah, spider sounds rough.
I think
just because I'm so afraid, the other thing that immediately came to mind for me would be spiders. Like scorpions.
Yeah. Oh. No, I think I would rather handle a snake than a venomous spider. Because
I think I would
the
too.
Snake's head, I can kind of keep further away from me, but the spider has to be fully on me.
Yeah, that's real. Yeah, I feel that. The other thing that I thought was, I'm like, oh, I'm thinking about these like small, like creepy crawler kind of like animals. But I'm like, what if you had to deal with like carnivorous, just like large cats? Like what if you're like in a room full of tigers and you got like mauled?
Fuck. I mean, there are people
very
who
Daniels
that has happened
in the lion's den if you wanted to like make it religious. I don't know.
You know what? I'm going to look up if any like offshoot of Christianity has like some lion handling shit because of Daniel.
I don't know. I just thought like that's interesting and that would be scary. And I immediately, to your point, was thinking like spiders and scorpions and these like creepy crawlers. But I don't know, like, what if you were, like, faced with, like, two, like, tigers that were, like, into flesh?
Or birds of prey.
Oh, my God, birds of prey. That would be another one that would be unexpected.
Very
unexpected.
Because
they could, like, swoop in on you, like, and you didn't see it coming.
Yeah, and their claws will fuck you up. They have beaks. Wow. Can't understand.
Guys, I just, like, don't want to, like, fuck with Mother Nature. Mm.
We are only at the top of the food chain, theoretically. Because of our brains. It is not because of our physical prowess. So the animals can get us, yes.
Yeah, the animals can getcha.
Yeah, we have a brain so that we know to not fuck with them. And that's why we survive.
Well, some of us have a brain to know not to fuck with them. Yeah, this story has proven otherwise.
Some people are, thinking otherwise. Okay, but the last thing that I would like to do is... Okay. I would like for both of us to just give our best speaking in tongues moment.
Oh my God.
You first.
Me first.
I don't want to plant any seeds. I want to see what, so picture you're in a snake handling church service and for social reasons, you have to participate in this because you're going to stick out if you're the only one not doing it. But if you just shout gibberish. Thank you.
You're welcome. Lord
Christ Jesus. There's mine.
I just felt like mine was like all tongue, like literal tongue. Oh my gosh. Well, listen. If this week or any week you find yourself handling snakes or speaking in tongues, we'd like to hear about it. And as always, you can get at us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, or on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And we hope to see you same time, same place next week because you haven't died of a snake bite or anything crazy.
Please don't die of a snake bite. Please wear gloves if you have to handle snakes.
And like, don't play loud music and speak in tongues.
No, know that they're sensitive to vibrations. Come on. Also, please rate, review, subscribe, and share it with your friends if you enjoy our podcast.
We'd love you for it.
We would. Good night.
Night.
Hey, Jesus, I love Lord Jesus, praise. It's a fun one.